Hey, this is Ari. Welcome back to the Energy Blueprint Podcast. With me today is Dr. Sue Morter, who is an international speaker, author, teacher, and doctor with over 30 years of experience, bringing together the ancient wisdom traditions with modern science and quantum physics. Dr. Sue's visionary models and techniques bring an entirely new approach to accessing creativity and living from personal freedom. She uses something that she calls the energy codes to guide her students to build in the neurocircuitry for unprecedented levels of creativity, health, and healing. This is a wide-ranging interview from the topic of energy fields and biofields in the human body and what that means and what it means from a quantum physics perspective and how that relates to sort of more conventional, more accepted medical models, as well as sort of Eastern versus Western ways of thinking, the power of the mind versus sort of the biochemistry of the body and the reality of those two things, and the interplay of those two things, and many other topics. I hope you enjoy this interview, and I hope you get a lot of value from it.
So welcome to the show, Dr. Morter. Such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's always a delight to be here and to see how we might be able to serve some people in some self-healing ideas. So, excellent.
So tell me the backstory here of how you came to do what you do and what is behind your work with the energy codes.
Sure. Well, I came upon it, honestly. I was born into a family. My father was a pioneer in energy medicine, working with the electromagnetic energy force and its influence on the nervous system back in the 70s. When I was growing up, he was developing techniques for non-forceful healing as an alternative method inside of his clinical practice. And so I grew up sort of as the guinea pig inside of that world, recognizing that some things worked and some things didn't. And he was, you know, just experimenting along the way with his client base and then his other physicians that were coming into the country to study with him. So it was my full blown exposure. In fact, the only healthcare that I have ever had has been through the use of hands only moving energy through the body. I've never gone to the doctor and taken an antibiotic for some ailment in order to heal. So it's been my life. That's how I came upon it, basically.
Wow. And what's your father's name?
M.T. Morter Jr. Oh, he was back in the late 60s and early 70s. They were working with you know, just understanding that there was an energy field that they first thought was emitted from the physical body. But what quantum science has shown thereafter is that the field actually creates the body, and then the operation of the nervous system emits another energy field. But the primary and most potent energy field is actually that essence that really creates the body in the developing embryo, so innate intelligence, etc. So he was doing work along those lines way back then.
Okay, so talk to me about energy. So when you use this word energy, it's more in the realm of energetic fields. And, you know, for example, when I use the word energy, I'm talking about ATP. I'm talking about cellular energy production by mitochondria producing this currency that powers the cells of our body called adenosine triphosphate, ATP. When you're using this word energy and moving energy through the body with our hands and energetic fields, it's the same word, but it's referring to different things. So
yes,
talk to me about what it's referring to and sort of what the science is that's underlying it.
Sure. Well, science has determined that everything is energy. Ultimately, everything is energy. Physical matter, the chair that you're sitting in, is energy that is just compressed into the density that we call physical form. And so when we're speaking about energy in its purest state, the ATP and the cellular structure and the nervous system and its structure and the skeletal system and its structure and our thought form system and its structure and our emotional status and the structures that go along with that are all based in energy. So the entire world that we're operating through is one that is energy vibrating in various frequencies. So the most highly vibrating frequency it would be a presence that someone would call spirit, and the most dense of which down that spectrum would be physical form in the densities that we know and measure in our physical world. So there's a spectrum of energy vibrating at different frequencies along the way. So the energy that I'm speaking about and working with its ability to facilitate the healing process is a higher vibrational frequency than the frequency, say, of the chemistry system of the body or the nervous system of the body. It's the version of energy that built those systems in the developing embryo, you know, in our points of origin. So there's just a spectrum, and we're used to working with the energies at the level of frequencies that we can pick up with our five senses. And so our world has been focused on a five sensory reality. And we know that if we do these things that shape shift, you know, how we're operating or change the qualities of the energies that run through the body, we have more kinetic energy, which is what you're referring to, or less of it if we're operating in a way that doesn't allow the system to do what it's built to do, to recreate enough energy to get through the day and to have enough energy to self-heal and to be creative and so forth. So it's just kind of think of it like a spectrum. And we're just trying to get as close to the highest vibrational frequency possible so that we can have the influence on as much of the physical system as possible. Physical system being at the bottom of that spectrum, and pure inspiration or our imagination and imagery and our perceptive field would be at the higher end of that same scale. So hopefully that puts in a context for everyone.
Yeah. So can you help me and our listeners understand, like, how much of this paradigm is things that fall within the tangible, measurable things where Western science would say, yes, we can measure that, we can measure these energetic fields that you're referring to, and we can recognize their existence, and yes, they're doing this, this, and this, and they're interplaying with this other system in this way, versus how much of it is more of a philosophy, more of a like a worldview, like a way of understanding how things work, mm-hmm. but where certain concepts that you're referring to are not actually measurable or recognized by Western science?
Well, I guess that depends on the Western scientist. There can be a Western scientist that is interested in quantum science and quantum mechanics, and they have a definite appreciation for the fact that we can measure that our thoughts have an influence on how our structure formulates, that our thoughts have an effect on the photons, the tiniest packages of energy, which have an effect on electrons, which have an effect on atoms, which have an effect on molecules, which have a creative effect on what chemistries we will or will not be able to create. You know, fast forward to another chapter, we could reference the Institute of Heart Math and their constant measuring of the influences of love into a scenario, and to that scenario then meaning the carrying out of a chemical environment in the body, and what sort of neurotransmitters are not only being manufactured, but which ones are making it to their destination and having an effect on our ability to cognize life beyond our five senses, et cetera, and to actually have a creative role impacting our body's ability to self-heal. So it's quite measurable. I mean, the last couple of hundred years, they've been really emphasizing the findings of quantum science and the fact that when we study particles small enough, they're still particles, which needs to be appreciated in all of the physical realm. And any scientist who's investigating the physical realm certainly needs to be apprised of its foundation and what it's made of. And that's really where quantum science came onto the picture. It came onto the picture by studying smaller and smaller particles until we got so small by studying through the electron microscope subatomic particles, they began to recognize that that these particles are so small, we can have an influence on them simply by the experiments and the expectations that the experimenters had when they set out to identify, is our world, is it physical or is it a wave of energy? And the answer was yes, it's both. And so depending on what we're setting up the equipment to measure, that's what we find. So what quantum science is really telling us is that we create what we're looking for. We find what we're looking for because we're having an influence on what's there to be seen. So, you know, it's a different conversation than the one that I was schooled in, going into school, graduating, opening my clinic and wanting to help people get well, and approaching that through outcomes and systematic approaches based upon hard, you know, basic sciences. And yet at the same time, you know, there's another voice that's coming along and saying, you know, there's a lot here based on placebo, based on, you know, all sorts of things, that there's a real tangible thing that we need to investigate here, given the power of our faculties working together to generate a body that will self-heal or not, that takes into account beliefs and subconsciousness and conscious elevation and so many different factors. So hopefully I'll stop and see where you want to go from there.
Yeah. So you've mentioned quantum physics a number of times. I'm curious how you would connect quantum physics to what's going on in the mind and what's going on in the body. How do you sort of conceptualize the interconnections there?
So quantum science is showing us, which is what I was explaining about these, when we break down physical matter and get to the tiniest particles that we can observe, we have learned that our mind influences their behavior, that our mind influences the behavior of physical matter, of our physical bodies. And so the mind and the body and quantum science is really proving that the mind and the body have an interwoven relationship, so interwoven they really shouldn't be studied as separate entities, to really understand the power that each of them have when they're working in unison in an integrated fashion. And so principles that do blend mind and body have a beautiful impact on the body's ability to heal itself, because we're using our faculties in a combined fashion rather than separating them out and trying to identify the full potential of any one facet of the system. It's like, you know, I was raised in at a time when the medical doctor was saying your nutrition has nothing to do with your health and your vitality. You don't need to pay any attention to what you eat. It doesn't make any difference at all. And, you know, there's a whole lot of research for a few decades that has been, you know, implying that the chemical balance of our systems has a huge role in the inflammatory response and decreasing that and allowing for healing to take over instead of a survival fight or flight mechanism running the show. So integration is key, and quantum science is really just bringing into the mix, I feel, the real cry for that, the need for us to operate as an integrative field when it comes to working with clients and patients and so forth to truly better their long-term health.
Do you see the realm of what's going on at the quantum level as having primacy as far as dictating or being the main influence on human health or happiness? Or do you see, for example, what's going on in the mind as having primacy? I assume you maybe see a bidirectional relationship with both of those, but I guess what I'm asking is, if what's going on at the quantum level is very important for our health, what do you see as the biggest factors that determine what's happening at the quantum level?
Yeah. So, you know, the vibrational energy, the vibrational frequency, because everything is energy and it's just vibrating at different frequencies, the frequency that creates the greatest healing environment is not positive thinking, but it's the opposite of negative thinking. So if we're not thinking negatively, the healing will happen in the body much more readily. if we are worrying and are angst ridden and are stressed out and are focusing on the worst possible outcome and those types of things, we're constantly generating a vibrational frequency and a chemical reaction to that, into that reactive thought disposition that we're maintaining. And it's creating a reality inside the physical body that the worst case scenario is happening. And when we're only just planning for it or worrying about it or contemplating it as a possibility. So that, just as an example, I would say that the power of the mind plays a huge role in whether or not the quantum science behind the scenes is going to allow for a positive healing environment or not. And the Institute of Heart Math and many other researchers have shown us that the quality of energy that is produced by an experience of and an expression of coherence, meaning a presence, not a resistance, a developed ability to stay in the present moment and not drag along the past or project ourselves into the future, but to just be truly right here, experiencing what we're experiencing in this moment, allows for us to process those things much more comprehensively. And when we do not comprehensively process the experiences that we are in, those unresolved aspects of our wholeness get pocketed away. And then the subconscious, they get shoved into the subconscious. And when the subconscious is storing more and more and more of this unresolvedness, it continues to press us toward a fight or flight disposition rather than being able to land in a healing environment and be able to proceed producing the chemistries that are responsible for healing. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So I would say that it is mental and emotional that has a tremendous influence, but it is also the amount of exercise that a person, you know, undertakes in their regular life stream. And it's also a nutritional component. It is also just a sense of self and what disposition a person approaches life that also contributes to their body's ability to be self-healing.
Mm-hmm. So the mind as being a very powerful agent in promoting change at the quantum level and at the macro level, so to speak, of our health and our outcomes physiologically. And so one natural sort of way that someone might go from there is to say, well, we can do these practices where for, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 minutes a day, we practice entering into a state of calmness, a state of serenity, a state of focusing on love or positive emotional states. And we can see that it has a positive impact on the quantum level and on physiology more broadly. What about what's going on in the mind as sort of a product of one's life? You know, the mind has its own sort of non-conscious processes operating 24/7. And I don't know the exact number of thoughts we think a day, 24,000 or whatever it is. But there's this constant thinking and self-talk that's happening, and narratives about what's happening in one's life and about oneself and about the world. And there are some people who have where their life experience, the way that they were raised, the things that they've gone through during their life have led to maybe lots and lots of very negative thoughts, lots of maladaptive ways of seeing the world, lots of feelings and self-talk around low self-esteem, low self-efficacy, seeing themselves as victims, seeing themselves as not capable. Do you have any thoughts, like how does your method and your paradigm sort of interplay with that dimension of a person's mind?
Yeah, great question. So I was speaking somewhat to this when I mentioned the sense of self. You know, it's a three words, right? Sense of self, but it's an entire world. And that world is greatly influenced by what you're mentioning in your question. And I spend a great deal of time in the coursework that I teach, really getting people to understand the distinction between living identified as the mind and living identified as the essential self that has a mind. Is we're ultimately supposed to be identifying as not the mind, as this presence. So it sort of brings into the conversation a bit of what one might reference as spirituality or psychology in some sense, and perhaps it's a combination of these things. But what we know is that the ego, the false self, is the one who's running all that self-talk, because only the ego needs to run that self-talk in order to figure out who it is and how it's going to operate and how it's going to defend itself should this scenario happen, or what it should have said in that last one. And it's constantly chewing on things, and it develops a filtering system that then we look out through and perceive life from its perspective. So it jades everything that comes into our world, and it chews on it, and then produces everything that we put back out into the world based upon our past experience and the beliefs, conscious and subconscious, that we have developed along the way, and a general disposition and a come from, if you will, that either works for us or it doesn't. And that's all activity of the mind. And if we can learn, and we can, how to get that off of us, and look at the mind and its tendencies and its patterns and its habits of processing information and knee-jerk reactions and conclusions that usually are premature, that it develops based on situations in order to protect itself. And the true self doesn't need protection. The true self is whole and complete. The true self is based in energy, which cannot be created or destroyed. That's how science would reference it. Spirituality would say, you know, we're built of spirit that, you know, is eternal. Quantum science is saying you guys are both right, and you're separated by a common language, and you're making it really complicated and difficult. So what if we allowed for some of this to drop in, recognize that we have a tendency to, we say, you know, my mind runs away with me. There goes my mind again. And it's all caught up in this situation. And, or maybe we don't even have the awareness. We're just identified as that and are caught up in the situation and angry about what they said or didn't say, or how they made that business decision and how it excluded or included, or these people or self or whatever. And all of that drama is caused by us being identified as the mind, enmeshed in it, and we don't even know. And so the work that I do is teaching people how to unattach from that, how to peel themselves off of the belief patterns and the history, the story, the tendencies for projecting into the future, all of the stuff that the mind is good at, but too much of a good thing is quite painful, as we, you know, have come to know. And so teaching people the distinction between the mind and the true self. And when we have that distinction in an operable fashion, and we're building the circuits to be able to express from the true essential self, instead of being caught up by the story that the mind is writing to protect itself once again, or to succeed, or to, you know, progress in some way, to achieve, then what happens is we start to have a different experience of self that isn't based on our history, that isn't based on our external environment, but rather is based on the internal environment and the energy, the wellspring of energy that truly we are made of, the animation that leaves the body when we supposedly die and that enters the body when we are born, et cetera. But that energy truly needs to be explored a little bit more if someone is readily being affected by their external environment or their internal environment here, and not influenced enough by the rest of who they are, their deep core guttural wisdom, their inherent ability to love or to forgive or to be more unconditional than the outer world would suggest is safe or smart. There are a lot more components to the human system than has been celebrated, basically, historically, before quantum science really came onto the scene and was telling us that, you know, these other things carry an influence that should be taken into account if we're really wanting to look holistically at how to heal.
So you mentioned kind of this over-identification with the mind, and wanting to, your work as being part of what you teach is to help people separate from that over-identification from the mind. How do you see the distinction between what you do versus some of the traditional sort of Eastern meditation approaches that also say something similar in that regard, that have a similar sort of core recognition of this over-identification that we humans tend to do with our minds, and developing what in some traditions they call the witness, right? The part of consciousness that is watching what's going on in the mind, rather than being, you know, the identified with what's happening in the mind. How do your methods or your, how does your view, your paradigm differ from that? And how do the methods differ in terms of practical techniques and so on?
Great. So when we are looking at the unidentification with the mind, you know, getting that off of us and creating a distinct identity of pure presence that is completely available, very similar processes to Eastern traditions, et cetera. In a Western world or around the globe really today, we are needing to take that ability. And then once that distinction is made, train the mind to support this true essential self instead of the mind overriding this true essential self. So it's not that we want to just get rid of the mind and leave it behind. It's an essential ingredient in our daily lives, you know, and in the operable world. And so we want to train the mind to be really in service to a greater wisdom, to a greater knowing, to an availability, which means not predetermining where we're going to go and then just driving the bus and making sure that we get there, but rather collaborating with the powers that be, the internal knowing, the gut feelings, the deep desires, et cetera, and merging those two efforts together. In addition to that, and I think most importantly, is we also have to train an individual to learn to live as a creative force in their lives, rather than just developing their ability to respond to others and others' creations better. We, for instance, in a healthcare system that has been focused on diagnosing problems and fixing them, at the end of the day, if we only ever focus on finding the problem and fixing it, at the end of the day, we're still no better at really creating our own reality, understanding what we would desire to manifest, and learning how to bring that forward, regardless of what's going on in our outer world, and regardless of if the support is there or not, or irrelevant to what someone's opinion or tradition or cultural norms might be. Innovation and forward movement happens not by paying attention to the outer world only, but by paying attention and giving a greater honor, a greater amount of attention to the internal impetus that is trying to surface as a creative force in someone's life. So we want to train people how to think productively, but not from the level of the mind only, but rather from the level of the mind integrated with a deeper core wisdom that one has access to if they only learn how to do that. But in the Western world, we weren't really raised to pay attention to what's going on in there. We were raised in comparison and competitivisms and checking in with the outer world and fitting in and being, you know, popular or passing the test or what have you that others were setting up for us. And little attention has really been given to our culture in terms of what if none of that was true? And what if you were bringing something forward that needed to be honored and needed to be cultivated in some ways and might be, you know, the next ingenious contribution to our ability to live wholly and fully as we are meant to? You know, we have a tendency to be symptom oriented. Let's suppress the symptom or get rid of the symptom and or you know, find the problem, which is closer to looking at the causal level. But if we're only looking for what's gone wrong so far, we're still not great at moving forward with what we would love to bring forward and what we might find as a creative impulse driving the course of our lives.
Mm-hmm. What if there's somebody listening to this, and I'm sure there's lots of people who maybe are listening to you and thinking, well, that sounds nice, but I don't know what this inner knowing is, this inner wisdom is, this vision that I'm supposed to have internally about what I'm supposed to do in my life or what I'm supposed to be in my life. What if somebody doesn't know? How should they go about tapping into that sort of inner well of wisdom that you're alluding to?
Yeah. So, you know, everyone has access to this inner wisdom, and everyone has experienced it at some point in their life. You know, the question is, are they experiencing it consistently? And is it allowed to have a voice or not? And, you know, it's the same scenario of someone saying something in the room with you and you instantly have this like, oh man, I knew it. I just thought about that yesterday, but it didn't land. I didn't have a hold of it enough to bring it forward. And here you are. And yes, I knew. And so that is showing them that it's there. It's just being overridden. It's just, there's a lot of noise on top of it. And so we've been giving a lot of attention to the noise and trying to manage the noise rather than just taking our attention off that and centering in on this inner voice and this inner knowing, et cetera. We also have had the experiences of, you know, when you think of somebody that you haven't thought of in years and they, you know, just this vivid thought process and you haven't talked to them in years. And, you know, the next day they call and, you know, this kind of non-local stuff is real. And everyone's had some experiences along those lines. So, you know, I've oftentimes been in a conference with, you know, filled with a few thousand doctors in the room and ask them, you know, how many of you have had this, you know, what would be called a paranormal experience, you know, that it's like you had a sense of one of the things I just described, or you had a sense about something, you had no reason to believe it or to know it, but you knew it and you went with it and it turned out to be true. And, you know, these things that just are beyond logic. And literally more than 95% of the people in the audience would raise their hand. And so I'm kind of like, if 95% of us are having these, you know, unusual, abnormal, paranormal experiences, why don't we just start embracing them as a little bit more normal? Why don't we just start looking and investigating and inquiring and allowing ourselves to, you know, just kind of open the blinders a little bit and have access to these things that we each have tapped into here and there. And so we might be able to really be making our life decisions based upon some constancy or some consistency of that same type of knowingness that is within. So I rarely find someone who's never had any kind of gut feeling that later was validated or that's never had any kind of intuitive idea that that was also celebrated or hasn't had that experience of thinking of someone and then that they haven't spoken to in, you know, a long time and that we're crossing these boundaries just a little bit, still maintaining some line of logic and reproducibility and that type of thing. But a true scientist, a true inquiry would do so and allow for additional evolution of our humanity to be occurring instead of just, you know, putting the lid on the box and saying, this is all we are, this is all we'll ever be. And we just need to get good at what's inside this box. You know, what science is showing us today is that there's actually no box unless we decide there's a box. And so what I like to teach people is how to anchor themselves and tether themselves inside their own system in a way that doesn't allow their mind to just race with them and just go off on some tangent and create some alternate, you know, painful possibility that a person then obsesses about and ends up creating an illness in their body because they've been living that scenario as if it was true, because their body, the subconscious, doesn't know the difference whether we're worrying about something happening or whether it's happening. It's just getting the impulse and it's giving a response. And so, you know, we want to create some regularity and some consistency in an approach to anchoring in what's so and being available to what could be, and allowing those to work together in a way that grows us and evolves us and allows us to break out of our history and you know, develop a better future based on what we're allowing to happen in the present moment.
I have a somewhat random question for you, but for some reason I feel compelled to ask you. I've known many people in my life who are healer types who sort of are very identified as healers, who do work as healers. And I've noticed that there's a I want to say maybe a type of personality that I've seen as a pattern that happens in some of these healer types, where I think, given the human mind's tendency towards black and white thinking, when they start to learn about the power of the mind, they become obsessed with the power of mind, and the power of mind trumps all and is like the only thing that matters. So they tend to start brushing off notions of eating this way or that way, or the effects of physical things on the human body, whether you're doing exercise or not doing exercise, whether you're getting light exposure or not getting light exposure, like all of these things become very minimized from their worldview. And they say, you know, whatever you're experiencing in life is just a reflection of your mind, of your thought forms, of things of that nature. I know that you don't fall into this category, because I've heard you say earlier in the discussions, you have acknowledged the things around like the importance of nutrition and other aspects of how we live our lives. But I'm curious if you've also encountered that style of thinking, and if you have any thoughts on it.
Yeah, you know, great insight in your question. I would say that, you know, I definitely do not fall into the category of thinking it's all about that alone. I do know that the mind has the ability to shut things down. If we decide no, it's a no, right? If I can't, this won't, it's not going to, no way, then that contracts our life experience, simply because we then won't allow for the possibilities of something beyond what our logical mind can come up with. We don't allow for anything beyond what we can perceive, and that's problematic. So I would never say that the mind is the be-all end-all, but I will say that the mind can certainly shut the door on things. Now, what it's shutting the door on is really what has my attention. I'm really more interested in what might the mind be eliminating as possibilities, and can I soften that, or can I learn more to open up to another possibility? Can I develop enough of a reference point that I'm open, you know, or can I be open enough to even develop a greater reference point by being curious and adventurous and having inquiry and doing research and staying open and, you know, learning? And so I don't think the mind is the be-all end-all, but I do think the mind can end-all. You know what I'm saying? It can shut things down. But when it's not shutting things down, I feel that the vital force, which is greatly enhanced by our loving capacity, our ability to let go, our ability to forgive, our ability, our willingness to lean in, our willingness to care and to soften and to begin again, to start over. All of these things play a huge role in allowing that true life force, the vital innate intelligence, to have its way, to do its thing. It will self-heal. We break a bone, the body knows what to do to heal it. If we don't get in the way, it'll do that. And if we cut ourselves, the skin will heal, and it's built to do that. And if we don't get in the way, it will. And so it's like the mind can get in the way, and our job is to develop the mind enough that it stops getting in the way, that it stops prejudging, and it gets off of the grudge or the disposition that it developed when they were unaccepted when they were a kid, or when they were shot down in college when they had some great idea, or when they were, you know, bringing their art to school in the fifth grade and somebody laughed, or, you know, whatever. All of those things that contribute to our worldview, whether we know it or not, they do. And if we can learn to let go of that, then we return to the state that allows us enough vital force to want to go out and exercise, to want to eat right and have self-care, that we develop enough wherewithal to enjoy life and to love into things and to allow for inspiration to be a true and valid component to my regular repertoire. And so the mind, you know, the mind's an amazing thing. It has the power to shut it all down, and And simply by releasing it, which is what I was speaking about earlier in our conversation, that it's not positive thinking that heals us. It's the removal of negative thinking. Because if we're not thinking at all, consciously or subconscious, if the subconscious noise has been remedied, has been dealt with, then the natural state of the body is going to be to self-heal. It's going to be to pick up on healing. And so if healing isn't happening, then there are some components to these essentials to living that we've not been keeping in balance or in harmony, at the very least, in our lives. What we eat and drink and how we breathe and think and how we exercise and how we rest and how we love, I think, are some basic essentials that everyone could stand to learn a little bit more about when it comes to getting a handle on their own lives. And even if they're not deeply educated as you are, they can still make a huge shift in their body's ability to heal simply by learning some basics about how to get these things in a balance that allows the body to do what it was built to do in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And beautifully said. I want to loop back into something that you said earlier. You were talking about kind of the distinction, and I'm going to use my words rather than yours. Please forgive mm-hmm. me if I don't mean to misrepresent anything here. Sure. I'm just trying to paraphrase. What came to me was this, a distinction between somebody who's living from a place of being a conscious creator of their life. They're tapped into this inner wisdom. They're tapped into this inner vision of what they want to make of themselves, what they want their world, their experience to be like, versus somebody who's not, versus the opposite end of the spectrum of somebody who maybe, I would say, perceives themselves to be largely to not have much of an internal locus of control, but to sees themselves largely as a pawn in someone else's game, as a victim of forces acting on them, rather than as somebody who gets to create their vision into the world. And first of all, just quickly, I'm curious if you would agree with that general picture I've painted there.
There is a spectrum of some that do and some that just can't see it that way.
Creator versus the victim of forces of the world.
Yes, totally. I wrote about it in my book, and it's a model of consciousness. And there's the front side of the model where one does perceive themselves as this creator and having this power, or can develop into that and knows that they could develop into it. And the back side of the model is one who's totally at the effects of my story, my history, my genetic inheritance, my external circumstances, my boss, my wife, my, you know, whatever. And, you know, and I just have to learn to deal with this. I just have to make do with what's going on. And definitely okay. Full spectrum. Yeah.
Okay. So what I want to ask you is, if you perceive that where somebody lands on that spectrum, if in your experience you find that is reliably and predictably related to one's health or one's energy levels, like are people, for example, with chronic fatigue in general much more likely to be in the worldview where they're experiencing themselves as sort of a victim of the forces of the world rather than being the conscious creator? Or do you see any reliable patterns there between health and where somebody falls on that spectrum?
I absolutely do. Closer to 40 years ago, when I first opened my clinic, I began watching who are the people that get well and who are the people that are constantly injuring or recreating or getting sick again or not really responding to the methodologies that we're utilizing. You know, was there a personality trait or characteristics of these people in any sort of categorical fashion, not wanting to pigeonhole them, but just out of curiosity. And there were books that were coming out at the time that were relating different dispositions to different types of ailments in the body. And I thought, well, you know, that's pretty radical compartmentalization here. And so I would take a couple of these books and I would work with my patients, and I would see what their symptoms were and see what this is that was being said in these books that were, you know, relationships between different dispositions and different physical ailments. And I stopped after 3 years, literally after 3 years, I laid the books down and stopped evaluating with each client, each patient inside the clinic all day long, because I was seeing such a clear agreement and relationship with these things happening. I was like, I didn't need to keep questioning it. It was like, okay, you know, all right. And so in the midst of that, I also have had direct experience in working with my own patients over the years in terms of noticing those that no matter what I would say to them, they were still holding on to their come from, locked in to, you know, there's just nothing I can do about this. You know, this is just who I am. It's just, I was born this way. It's just what it is. And I would talk and talk and talk, and they would agree and they would hear me. And then they would come back in their next visit and just be coming right from the same place again. And so what I began to develop was a way of being with the individual who wasn't in years go by, and they're bringing their children, their grandchildren are now becoming patients. And I'm knowing these people for a long period of time and witnessing that they're not changing that disposition anytime soon. And so I began not trying to change them, not trying to teach them, but meeting them where they were. And interesting things would happen, Ari. When I would meet them where they were completely, without ever trying to teach them, you know, you could open this up, there could be a little something here for you to think about. Think about it from this perspective, but rather just listening and being present with them and hearing their victim story, but hearing it completely unconditionally, I began to recognize that they would heal. And it was not that they were thinking more positively, it was that they were being met in some way, that they were being validated as a person. And that validation was kicking in to a greater healing mode, less of a fight or flight sympathetic dominance in the system. Their parasympathetic sympathetic balance would come into presence because they were being seen, they were being met, they were being validated in some way. Even though my come from was, oh my gosh, there's so much more available to you, but it's what matters most is that you get your needs met in this visit in the clinic. And what would happen is there would be a transformation, they would heal, but it still, I feel, was directly related to a disposition that would come upon them. It was as if they just wanted to be heard. They just wanted to be known. They just wanted to be seen. They just wanted to be validated. And once that happened, this constant running of the mind that likely could have been traced back to some time, you know, way back in their past, where they weren't heard and they weren't seen and they weren't validated. And they've been in fight or flight, fighting against that all their lives. And here someone in a role with them that they respected or that they trusted, and that here we were dealing with these things. And from this new perspective that was allowing them to exhale into this space would automatically kick in that innate intelligence and the body's ability to self-heal, because it would kind of push the clutch in on this constant fight or flight, got to validate, got to prove, got to be somebody, got to make it in this world. And I just can't, you know, it's just not working, hamster wheel that would be happening. So that's a long answer to your question. I could have just said, yes, I've seen a correlation between the two. But I just want to give some example there so that people can really relate to the fact that no matter where we are on the spectrum, whether we're, you know, feeling, you know, very creative and empowered, or we're feeling like, you know, I've tried a lot of things and nothing seems to have worked for me, what's wrong with me, or what's wrong with that system, that it's not working for me, that there are some mysteries that can be spoken to that are not quite so mysterious when we start to break it down and really have an understanding of how the whole system works and how we might be able to support it in all ways.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. Dr. Mortar, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And I would love to just give you the opportunity to send people wherever you want to send them, let them know how they can follow your work or what sort of events and projects you have coming up.
Oh, excellent. Well, we have some great projects always, you know, happening, coming. We have a big event called Heal Yourself, Heal Your Life that is coming up, and people can learn about it on our website. It's drsuemorter.com. Drsuemorter.com. It's drsuemorter.com. And I also have lots of stuff online. I'm very easy to find and certainly available to help you in whatever ways possible. So there's lots here for everyone.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Mortar. I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for all you're doing. It's great to connect with you today.
Hey there, this is Ari again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, if you found it valuable, please share it with your friends, share it with your family, help me get the word out there. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit that little bell to get notifications every time we release a new video or new episode of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for supporting my work at the Energy Blueprint. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will see you in the next.